When people talk about the future of space exploration, the topic of a manned mission to Mars always seems to generate a lot of excitement and a lot of discussion about what life would be like on the red planet.
Earlier this month, a group of scientists headed into the middle of the Utah desert. For 2 weeks, they conducted a mock Mars mission to try and simulate what a real-life mission might be like.
Our next guest got to go along on the mission, and she chronicled her journey for Space.com. Elizabeth Howell is a space journalist and was a member of Crew 133 at the Mars Desert Research Station. She's here to tell us about her experience. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Cynthia, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, tell us about the Mars Desert Research Station. How did you find yourself on the crew of a two-week simulated mission to Mars?
It was really an 11-year journey because it's been in existence since about 2002, and I've always wanted to go. However, you need to have some qualifications to get there, and in my case, I needed to sort of build up my experience in the space journalism field, which I've luckily got to do in the last couple of years. In addition to that, I'm also a student at the University of North Dakota, which is it's a space studies program. I'm a distant student, a Canadian who does the work there. And when I was doing my studies there, I still am, I got an email from one of the other students who happened to have been on two previous missions to the Mars Desert Research Station, and she wanted to know if anybody at the university was interested in participating. And that's essentially how I got on the crew. I presented my credentials as a journalist. They needed a crew journalist, and I got right on there. So it was pretty exciting.
When they do these mock missions, what's the goal? What are we trying to learn?
We're trying to figure out what kind of procedures and what kinds of experiments would work here and also on the red planet. Now, there are a few limitations, of course, where it's only 2 weeks as opposed to a couple of years, which is what a Mars mission would take. We can't simulate things like the lack of atmosphere or the lack of gravity or the lesser gravity that Mars has. But all that being said, there are a lot of things that are quite similar. We were sitting out in the middle of the desert, as you had mentioned earlier, and that meant that we had to basically rely on ourselves. The nearest town was about a 7 or 8 mile drive away over very hilly roads, and we, of course, were not encouraged to go there. We were in full simulation, and so we had to come up with a lot of resources by ourselves. Just sort of if something broke, we had to figure out how to fix it on station, that kind of thing. Another thing that we had to do as well was to communicate with the outside world only by email, because when you're doing a mission to Mars, it's about a 20-minute time delay between Earth and Mars, and so it takes some time to take communications there back and forth. And so email was the best way that we could simulate it, even though we didn't have a time delay. And then the third thing we did was we went outside in spacesuits, these mock spacesuits. We would have a jumpsuit, we'd put on a helmet, we'd have a backpack, and we'd go outside every single time to do our tasks out there, because essentially if you walked outside on Mars without a spacesuit, you die. So we wanted to make sure that we had that aspect simulated as much as we could.
Why was it important to simulate it to that extent? I mean, you have perfectly good oxygen to breathe in Utah.
It's very true. But at the same time, when you're trying to do something such as set up a radio telescope, it's such a big difference if you're doing it in this mock spacesuit as opposed to doing it with just your normal clothing, as we discovered, because we actually were putting up a radio telescope, and those things are bulky and they're heavy, and you're trying to swing hammers and drive these stakes into the ground. Your center of gravity feels all weird because you got this heavy backpack on your back, and you're feeling all awkward. You can't hear things properly because you have the helmet over your ears. So it changes the experience completely, and what we thought was going to take about an hour to set up ended up taking two, just because we had all these different things to contend with.
We have a fashion picture of Elizabeth, by the way, in her suit on our Facebook page, Central Time on WPR. Elizabeth, how do you pack for a trip like this?
It's really hard because you're spending three weeks on the road without laundry. In the middle of nowhere where you couldn't go out to get shampoo if you forgot it. So I was a terror that I would forget something important. And in fact, I did. I forgot lip balm. So I had to ask my crewmates to give me some extra because it's dry out there. So what you're doing is you're trying to think, all right, what kind of things would I need if there was a power failure where I would need extra clothing, I would need a sleeping bag, I would need to get various warm things. What would I need if my clothes got dirty? Well, I need extra clothes. And so you can imagine you're starting to pile things on. You're saying, all right, I need warm winter clothes. I need cooler clothes. I need clothes for bedtime. I need clothes for working outside. And also they have to be clothes that you don't care about very much, because anything that you put on got dirty within literally 10 minutes. I remember one time putting on some pants and looking down, already I had smudged mud all over them somehow, because mud would just blow in. We would keep the windows and the doors all closed as much as we could, but as soon as we went out for a Mars walk, so to speak, and came back in, we'd be tracking mud everywhere. We'd sweep it up, and then the next time somebody went out, the same problem would happen. So it was just a big challenge. I had 4 bags that I was carrying back and forth from Ottawa, Canada, all the way over to Las Vegas and zigzagging back to Utah because of the flight paths and all that. And I just had to make sure I didn't forget anything as I was going along there. But it seemed to work out pretty well.
Tell us about the crew you were with.
They were phenomenal. They ranged in age from about 30 to 60 years old. They came from three countries. I was a Canadian. We had four from the United States and one from France, and all from different backgrounds. We had people that were doctor. We had a doctor on the crew. We had an engineer on the crew. We had a couple of scientists. We had people who had gone back to grad school after doing another career, you know, essentially an executive career. So just having this diversity of backgrounds and opinions and experience really came in handy when it came to solving a problem, because it usually came to a situation where you'd say, well, we need to go back on some experience, whether it be managerial or technical, and somebody who tended to have it. And that just made things amazing. So when it came to our discussions, we were very clear from the beginning. We were six strangers walking into this not knowing each other, and we said we have to communicate. We have to be as clear as possible about what we need, because if a dispute arises and we're all just walking around with these resentments piled up inside, we're sitting in a 1,200-foot habitat, sorry, square-foot habitat, and we're just not going to have the capability to function as a crew if we're going to be all resentful and not talking to each other about situations. So we just came in with this idea that we're going to be a family, we're going to rely on each other. If we have problems, we're going to talk it out. And I have to say, it worked out so well. In fact, I'm so close to everybody right now that I'm trying to figure out how to alter my summer vacation plans so I can see as many of them as possible. The guy from France, probably not so much, but the foreign states, definitely a possibility.
So what kind of things did you do on Mars? What were your operating missions there?
Our big mission, as I said earlier, was to put up the radio telescope, but we had a number of experiments going on. The doctor from France was actually looking at whether an astronaut, an untrained astronaut, could administer anesthesia properly to somebody who gets hurt on Mars. And that's important because, you know, what if the doctor gets hurt? Who's going to take care of him or her? You'll have to be the other patients. And so he had a training protocol in place. He had a PowerPoint presentation and some videos and a mannequin, actually almost like an animatronic mannequin that would respond to certain things. And then he was having us inject simulated liquid into the mannequin and then monitoring the responses, which is really cool. We also had somebody else who was looking at helmet temperatures as well as how much you were exerting yourself when you're going outside to see if there's any kind of correlation between how hot it felt inside of there and how much you were running around out there. We had a survey that was looking at radio communications, what the dead zones were around the habitat, because for safety reasons, it's good to know where you're going to be out of radio communication. And then we had a couple of geological experiments looking at layers and also looking at hydrothermal vents in the area. So just being embedded on this crew and watching the science in action was quite an educational experience for science journalists, because you get to see how careful they are, how incremental they are, how much they rely on other studies to get their work done. And in fact, there already are some collaborations. They're a little early stage, so I won't say what's going on right now, but there, I already have seen at least one new collaboration coming out of this research, which is really exciting for them.
Elizabeth, very short on time here. Having done this, would you want to go to real Mars sometime?
Yes, but only if there's a return ticket.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, as always. I had fun.
It's Elizabeth Howell. She just returned from a two-week mock mission to Mars. She chronicled her experience on space.com and joined us to talk about what life could be like on the red planet.